Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. I'm John Martin.
And I'm Dean Reverman.
Today on the show, we have welcomed back James Cordy for the fourth time on this podcast.
He's back. For
the record. We're going to talk about content marketing. We're going to talk about what it is. What do you need to get started? Who do you need to get started? And what does a successful campaign look like? All that with Cordy. It's time for us to plug in and get connected.
Welcome to the Tech Connect podcast. It's time to get connected.
All right, as I said, we have James Cordy back with us for the fourth time. You know how on SNL, when they have a five-time guest, they give them like a special jacket
right?
or something? I guess we're going to have to do that.
Oh, man.
Because you're going to be back again, let's be honest.
Of course.
We know you are.
Yeah. So, yeah, put that one on the list. A jacket, what do you want, Cordy? You want a jacket? You want a hat?
Thought.
What is it?
I thought there might be something to a jacket. The weather's going to turn here pretty soon.
There you go. Have the Technic logo emblazoned across the back or something, or maybe just a pair of headphones. We'll figure out something for you, man.
You know, being here talking with you guys, I'm always pretty comfortable, but four times in, I'm like, it's ready to go.
That's right. There we go.
There's like a little bit of nerves and not so much this time.
All right. Well, we're ready to go, too.
We know what we're talking about today.
Exactly. It's it's a popular topic
that
for
always
us.
Helps.
It's something we're very familiar with, something Cordy and I definitely work on a very regular basis, and that is content marketing.
Yep.
So this is one of those terms that I feel like is always tossed around in the marketing world, and some people seem to get it and some don't. I think some people just think it's just like, well, if you got something that's a piece of content, something that's written or something, it's just throwing it out there and seeing who's interested in it, right? But it's a lot more than that. We've learned it's a lot more than that. We've been working over the last several years to refine our content marketing approach here at Blue Star. Think we're doing a pretty good job with it so far, so we're going to talk a little bit about what we do, what works for us, what we recommend. So first, I kind of want to talk about some of the different types of content marketing that are out there in the world. You've got ebooks, you've got white papers, videos, case studies, blogs. This podcast is content marketing, let's be honest. There's a lot of stuff that's out there. But I want you, Cordy, I want you to start off and tell us, how do you define content marketing and how does it work?
So, in my mind, content marketing is about creating, developing assets that do a couple of things for your business, your service, your product. And the number one thing that it should do is educate and add value. If it comes across, again, whether it is a case study or an ebook or a video, if it comes across as kind of a glorified product message, then you're probably not doing it right. And the people on the receiving end of it are going to see that and kind of look right through it. So it's got to educate. It's got to add value. But it also has to brand your business, right? I mean, it's marketing. So we're still trying to make people aware of what it is we do and what problems we solve for them. And, personally, because of what we do through the Appware program, it's very focused on ebooks or e-guides. I kind of forget sometimes that not all content marketing has that same direct lead generation intent. So I want to kind of just draw that distinction as well, as to say that a lot of companies that do content marketing really well do it organically, so not necessarily through paid means. For instance, this podcast is a great, we don't necessarily expect someone to watch the Tech Connect podcast, a non-customer, and then go, gosh, I got to sign up with Blue Star. Maybe.
You'd love it if it happens.
But but it's not, we're not expecting that direct response. It is more of a long game. Hey, this is who we are. These are the things that we are experts in. So if you're interested in those areas, if you need these types of products, sure, we'd be a great partner.
We just gave away the store there, Cordy. Like, hey, folks, we are marketing to you. Sorry, you didn't know that. That's what we're actually doing here.
But it's
with a purpose, and it obviously, is with an end in mind and a informative aspect.
Well, and when you play the long game, you need to be able to be in it for the long game, right? I mean, you can't use that tactic if you don't have the resources or the wherewithal or the ability to play a long game. And and quite frankly, I mean, around a podcast or when you play long games like that, you have to be kind of invested in it and you have to have those capabilities to do it. But I like where you're going with that, the long game and short game.
Well, and I think it's probably important to say that mostly, for our conversation today, we will be talking about, I want results next week, not I want results next year, the year after. Both, strategies, and we talk about this sometimes, the idea of organic SEO. Should you be writing blog posts with the idea that, it's not going to rank immediately, but we've done the research, we know there's an opportunity. Yes, you should be doing that. But a lot of people, especially in, you know, these days and times, need results sooner than later. Right. So that's what we're going to be focused on is, you know, what do you need? How do you go about generating content that is a strong indicator of real interest? And how do you get it into the market in front of the right people quickly? So that's where the focus will be today.
Yeah.
Gosh, one thing that I was thinking of as you were talking, and I don't mean to derail here, but I know that some people think that content marketing, oh, we're just going to throw up a blog. And we can use that as the platform, and you know, and then we can also use, you know, whip up an ebook or something like that and use it to promote it. And countless times I have gone, I've received some marketing. Okay, it's got me to the point where I'm going to click on it and go and see. And then I'm kind of diving into the company. What's their blog look like? And then I'm let down. The last blog post they had was in 2018 something, right? And it's like, okay, so they heard from somebody, hey, you got to throw up some blogs, you got to do this, do these basic things. And it seems really disingenuous at the end of the road. And I think that that's one thing that we really need to be cognizant of marketers is genuineness, if I can use that word, is going to be critical because I feel like the audience has become very savvy to digital marketing. I mean, we all consume it on a daily basis, and we know the triggers when somebody's kind of pulling one over on us a little bit. And so you really kind of need to be savvy. And yeah, that's a little bit of a long game, I guess, but that affects the short game because if you're trying to get somebody. So anyway, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking to myself, there's some pitfalls. Maybe we'll get into some of the pitfalls as well.
That abandonment concept is one that I always find frustrating. Like if I'm out doing some research and I come across like, oh, this particular site has some great articles and topics about it. And then I see the byline and I see the date. Yeah, it was like 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. Like, really? Like,
and that was your recent post?
Yeah, like, are you an expert in this or not? Because if you are, you should be talking about it on as consistent of a basis as possible. And it's fine if you don't have, you know, want to blog every single day. It's fine if you're not posting an article every single day. That's okay.
Right.
But if you're not doing it at least once, you know, once a month, you know, once a quarter at the absolute worst, then yeah, it looks like you're just, you were trying to check off a box. Somebody came up with an idea one day and said, hey, we need to do some content marketing. Let's start a blog. And then it fell by the wayside somewhere. Mm-hmm. There was no consistency left behind it.
Yeah, I've even gotten that question, you know, at different conferences. Hey, you know, we've been blogging, but we're just not seeing the leads come in. And you guys have heard me say this a million times, probably a few on this podcast even, the details are important. And I know we're not necessarily here. I mean, we're here to talk content marketing, and that includes stuff like blogging. And done well, blogs can be a huge driver of new business. You know, on the appware side of things, as I already mentioned, we're so focused on the e-guide ebook creation that our blog is a bit of an afterthought. But even then, and I'll connect my points here, we've gone and taken ebooks that we've used for campaigns that have run their course. Couple months later, we'll get around to creating a really in-depth blog post from that ebook. So it's really drilling down. There's diagrams, there's examples, there's links, which is what a good blog post should be, right? Yep. But then the detail that's important is, okay, you've gotten someone's attention. Hopefully you've gotten the right person's attention. Do they know what to do? Have you made it clear, better said, what they need to do to get in contact with you, to learn more, to schedule a demo of the product or service or what have you? That's where a lot of people fall. And it's, you know, quite frankly, it's because they haven't been given the right advice or they don't have the expertise to go, well, what are those, you know, what are those things? What should we be doing to, once we have someone's attention, maximize it?
Right.
And you know, the example I'm thinking of is we had created an ebook from something we did for law enforcement asset and inventory tracking. And we've had, over the course of probably a couple of years, two or three, you know, law enforcement individuals come to that blog post and leave a comment, which wasn't necessarily what we intended them to do. We intended them to click the learn more button, go look at the product solution then inquire, but they didn't. They left a comment, but at least they had options. So,
and it's still someone now that's potentially becomes a lead, you know, like, hey, I know who you are. You left a comment, you know, now I can reach out to you.
And we're not paying anything for that. So it's always, yes, the long game, the organic side is definitely worthwhile. Plant those seeds now. But yeah, like we said, and maybe to segue into it a bit, we are more so focused on a partner comes to us and we couldn't, so to speak, we're not, Appware Solutions isn't about going and creating content that lives on people's websites or their properties. Mm-hmm. We go and create content for them. We use paid social means to get it in front of their target audience as defined by them. And we drive them leads back, you know, a couple of days later.
Definitely. So then let's talk about that aspect, because we mentioned like the big part of what we're going to discuss is the lead generation aspect of content marketing, where you're putting out a piece of content because not only you do want to inform somebody, but ideally you want them to read it, you want them to engage in some way, and more importantly, you want to collect their information because you want to find out who they are, why they were interested, and ideally be able to reach back out to them and start a conversation that ultimately would lead to a sale. So James, from your perspective, I want to find out, what do you think are some of the keys to an effective campaign that is aiming at lead generation? And then what does the follow-up and engagement look like after that campaign is launched?
Sure. So, you know, I just said this the other day on a call. Actually, it was with one of my coworkers, so someone on the Blue Star team, which was been involved in so many campaigns at this point that I think, if not the top indicator, one of the top indicators of a campaign that isn't set up to succeed is the inability to define an audience well. And so, you know, what we see a mixed bag in terms of the solutions we're out there promoting. Some of them, and we'll talk about at least one of them later, are specifically built for a specific audience. A practice management solution specifically built for veterinarians. It's not a practice management solution that could work, it is built for them. But then there are others, very good tools that are built horizontally across industries or built for retail, let's say, but they're not for a specific retailer. They're not for a liquor store specifically or an apparel store. But it is still our advice that we should define the target in that way. And it's maybe the solution isn't any more useful to a liquor store than it would be an apparel store, which isn't necessarily ideal from a product market fit. But in terms of what it enables us to do in improving the messaging and the reaction to the messaging, if we instead say, fashion store owner's guide to modern point of sale, we're going to get a higher engagement than if we just said the retail owner's guide to point of sale and included apparel and other industries in there. Sounds simple when you say it, but when you see the numbers, it really stands out that that's the way to go. So number one key to an effective campaign would be a well-defined audience. And that can be a combination of industry or sub-segment of, like I just said, retail, or, and we're working on a campaign with our Honeywell team right now that truly makes more sense to be horizontal across industries, but the nichiness of it is going to be job title. So it's going to be focused on HR and safety directors. It's kind of a COVID-related solution, but we know that's applicable, you know, to manufacturing, to warehousing, to retail on some level. So it can kind of be either or, but it needs to be one or the other. So if it's, you know, if you think that there might, if you can't get as specific on job title or job function, and again, I'm talking about a title of a guide or an ebook in this case, I forget which one I said. If you can't be specific to a job function, make sure you're talking specifically about an industry, a specific industry, even a subsegment of one, and vice versa. If you can't be as specific, or if it doesn't make sense to be as specific to industry, really try to focus in on who am I talking to there. And if you run into fuzziness, if you go, gosh, I'm not really sure, you know, sometimes it's operations, sometimes it's IT, think harder. Do some more research. Try as hard as you possibly can, because that is, like I said, the number one indicator. But beyond that, so number one, you know who you're talking to. This is, you know, basic marketing, right? A lot of this stuff is really just common sense. Yeah. Know your audience. Number two, when we're talking about an ebook or an e-guide, is the title of the piece. So it has to do two things, and it has to do them both equally well. You're looking for the crossroads of compelling topic. Ooh, I got to know about prescriptive analytics and how they can, you know, raise my margins and decrease shrinkage. But also, that title has to be a strong indicator. It doesn't do us any good if we get a million people to download a piece of content. If when you ask yourself the question, well, if a prospect downloaded something titled X, is it reasonable to assume they might actually be, you know, a buying prospect for this? If you go, well, not really. It was kind of more general interest. Then, okay, you know, if you're really just trying to fill the top of the funnel, great. Because when a lot of times when you talk about content marketing, people talk about the different phases of the buyer's journey. And I buy into that on some level, but I also believe that in 2020, the mapping of that buyer's journey, no one really knows how to place. And I think it might have been you.
New map.
Yeah. Well, and it's like a scatter plot almost. Like I see an ad on Instagram, and instead of necessarily clicking on it, I might screenshot it and go, I'm going to go do my research separately. I'm going to Google search this company name, this product name later. So it's really kind of tricky. But I guess my real point was, we try to create content that is closer to consideration phase. So it's someone who's really out there doing their research, as opposed to, well, I'm pretty sure they're a restaurant owner. But again, my topic was so broad that they were interested in it, but it doesn't necessarily ladder up to them being interested in my product. So compelling title, that's also a strong indicator of potential interest is the way I like to say it. Another thing that I don't mention often, but I, as a guy with a design background, the look of your ads, you know, the design of the ebook itself, but then the professional look of the messaging you're putting out there mm-hmm. is very important. You know, it's one of those things, well, I don't think you should test a good looking ad against a bad one, but I feel like over the course of years and campaigns, when I kind of reflect on the look and the feel of, you know, some of the covers and some of the ads we've put out there, I definitely feel like those that I feel, wow, this was a really great looking ebook. These colors are strong. It just looks professional. It looks trustworthy. I think that's a huge piece of it as well. So invest in good design. And that's, I think that's something that transcends marketing. That's just true for business.
Yeah.
And then lastly, and you kind of cued this, John, is a strong follow-up plan. You can absolutely knock it out of the park on defining your audience, creating great content, generating leads at a high rate in a low cost per lead or whatever. And then if there isn't good communication to say, hey, Dean, just so we're crystal clear, man, when that lead comes through, A, it's yours. Mm-hmm. And then B, let's talk about how we're going to follow it up. You know, are you going to connect with them on LinkedIn? Which is something I want to touch on later. It's kind of a new light bulb I've been having in terms of nurturing. Nurturing is a hot topic. And for those of you unfamiliar with the buzzword, what we mean is you've generated a new contact. Nurturing is the process of staying in touch with them in a relevant, non-annoying way until the point, because as we all know, you know, when you're doing this kind of marketing, it's not product specific or solution forward, as we sometimes say. You haven't necessarily caught someone that's getting ready to make a decision next week. It could be a month from now. It could be 6 or 8 or 12 months from now. How do you make sure that when that time comes, if that time comes, they're going to make a purchase, they go, oh, yeah, Dean at Blue Star, they solved this problem. Let me at least take a deeper look and see if they're a real candidate or not.
Right. I want to interrupt for a second to kind of mention the idea that what you just mentioned about, like you talking about buyer journey earlier and the idea that the buyer journey is all over the place at this point. I think also a key thing to think about when you're doing content marketing, and especially in this particular space in the world that we are in, in the IT channel, is that these are projects that typically are not something that someone's just going to make a decision. Like, get an ebook, that looks cool, click the buy button, and the next day they're up and running.
No.
That's not how this works. Mm-mm. And any of our VAR listeners know that. They know that, like, it's not that simple. So, again, that nurturing process becomes even much more important because that the day that they get that content, they may be interested, maybe they are considering this, but they may be nowhere close to being able to make a purchase at that point or to be ready to start a project. It might be they're in just in the research phase of, hey, we know down the road we need to invest in an entirely new point of sale system for our, you know, for
warehouse
our company.
Warehouse management system.
Like we know that this is something we need. But we're not there yet. The funding's not there yet. It's, you know, it's a project I've been assigned to with an expectation of having something in place by 2022.
And the reality
is, so if you're
is,
not still connecting with them all the way up to then, they've probably forgotten about you by then.
Because if you are a director of operations or director of warehouse, you're getting cold emails probably weekly from competitors, right? So you should give yourself the leg up because your starting relationship was one of adding value.
Yep.
If you've done content marketing correctly, right? If you've put together an ebook that isn't just a brochure for your product, it is a, interesting, I didn't know that. I've learned from this. Oh, who did this come from? And again, that's one of those things that you never know how on your radar your brand really is when you're doing that kind of marketing, which is why the nurturing is important.
Yeah.
Which is why, you know, we have had a big focus over the probably the last year solid on how do we help our partners cut through the clutter when it comes to follow up. I get you to download the ebook, but can I get you to respond to my next email or pick up the phone or connect with me on LinkedIn? And what are the creative, you know, ways in and ideas around that, which I think we'll get into later.
Yeah. You know, and one other thing I want to touch on real quick too, when you talked about having an effective message as far as like the title of your ebook and targeting your audience and having a defined audience, is to make sure that the rest of the content matches that as well. Because there's been a few times that I have downloaded a piece of content that sounded like it was for me and about me. And maybe that was just the title and the content itself was just generic, you know, like something about like, you know, let's say, you know, the title could have said the reseller channel content marketing guide to generating leads. I'm like, wow, that's awesome. That's what I need to know. And then I get into the content and it's just a general thing of like, content marketing is about putting out blogs and ebooks and maybe doing a video here and there. This is how you can do content marketing. It has nothing to do with my industry. It has nothing to do with my role.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got me with the title, but they didn't follow through with the rest of the content.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate when that happens. So yeah, like the one you mentioned earlier, like the Fashion Boutique Guide to Point of Sale or something. Great title, but if your actual content is just in general about retail point of sale,
right,
you're gonna fall flat to them. They're gonna start reading it and go, this is all the general stuff I knew. Right. Yep. So, you know, the content, you know, like let's say, you know, any kind of design to it, if there's images or pictures throughout or something, you know, or graphics, that should all be based around fashion boutiques. All those imagery should look about that. The content should be about that. If you're talking about loyalty, you know, discussing maybe like, hey, you know, people like to try and buy. Maybe they want to have the option to buy in store and go, you know, or purchase in store and have shipped to home, or look at more, you know, inventory. Like, make sure the message is still about that particular industry and understand what their troubles are. And write to those troubles.
Yeah, you're convincing them you understand their problems.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Even if it's not your specialty, if you've done your research and you've developed content that speaks to them and to their particular issues, you're gonna hold on to them much longer as they're reading through that content, because they're gonna say, all right, these people, they get me. They understand my business. They've done their research. They get who I am. I'm gonna follow through and see where this goes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let me close by saying this on the nurturing side of things. I just glanced at my notes. Two quick bullets. Your goal, once you've generated that new contact through the ebook download, which again, we know what we're doing, right? Hopefully everyone listening understands we're marketing to people through content.
Right.
Depending on who you're marketing to, and we, like I've said, have run the gamut in terms of industries, there are a lot of industries that have never seen this kind of content marketing, fire and rescue, law enforcement. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of ebooks being targeted toward police chiefs and fire chiefs, which is one of the reasons they respond to it really well. So once you've gotten them to do that, number one goal is make sure that you as the salesperson / your company is on the radar.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning just because they downloaded the ebook doesn't mean they went, oh, wait a minute, who sponsored this ebook? Oh, okay, I see that there's a software partner here, a hardware partner, and that's not happening. That math isn't happening.
Right.
Hopefully the math that's happening is, that was pretty interesting. I'm not regretful that I gave them my phone number and email for this, and gosh, why did I have to give my phone number? Is someone going to follow up with me? They're not as aware of what we're doing as we are. So number one, make sure, again, it is important not to be overbearing. So maybe it's a connecting on LinkedIn. Maybe it is just shooting them a personal email. Hey, thanks for the download. Just wanted to give you a quick idea of who we are, why we created the guide, and how we can help if you need us, kind of thing. So that's number one. And then number two is becoming a resource. At the very least, someone that's in their digital life on a regular basis, maybe digital / you know, telephones or conferences or whatever. But this is what I kind of alluded to earlier. There's a lot of talk about drip marketing via email, setting up these multi-step, complex, sophisticated nurturing, which, sure, if you have the assets to do that, the team to do that, sure, it's worthwhile, especially if you give it a lot of thought and can make it really good. But the thing I've been thinking about lately is this idea, not that every industry is on LinkedIn at a heavy rate, but we rely on LinkedIn a lot for lead generation, you know, as a channel. If that's the case, you know that these leads are on LinkedIn. If you can connect with them, what a great way, if you're doing social media right from a salesperson's perspective, to nurture someone or nurture maybe even several prospects kind of at scale, to use that buzzword, meaning now that we're connected, Dean sees everything I share. Yep. I don't have to email and poke Dean specifically every day. If we've connected and I'm sharing relevant webinars, relevant videos, you know, and it doesn't all have to be about my product, right? It can just be about our industry, apparel, fashion, what have you. What a great kind of semi-passive way to have someone go, who the heck was that? Oh, right. That was that guy he was a sales guy that connected with me after I downloaded that thing, if they remember all of that. But I'm really starting to think about that. And a lot of the aha moments I have, I feel like, related to digital marketing is observational. I see what good software companies, generally at software companies, are doing out there. What kind of tactics are their salespeople using that do cut through the clutter or that are interesting? And, you know, again, when I take an indicating action, downloading a piece of content or whatever it is, and someone reaches out and then connects with me, like I said, I find that the best ones are also doing a good job of sharing relevant info on LinkedIn. So just wanted to call that out.
Yeah. A couple of notes that I made as you guys were talking, and I think this is really critical, because if you think about the optics of a smaller to medium-sized reseller or MSP that is out there, one of the critical things that we should know and execute on, I guess, is enabling the entire team. And I know I've talked about this in the past, but I really like preaching about this because I think it's so necessary. You know, as a marketer, you can get in a cave and you can develop these or devise these wonderful campaigns that maybe only I know about it. And if it's like me, meaning, you know, I work for a reseller. There's only 30 people in my company. You know, I'm the one in charge of marketing. I'm the one producing the content. I'm the one who's developing the campaigns and doing all these things. But find yourself on a little bit of an island. It's really critical to share that with the team, you know, because it can help with follow-up. I'll just do the shortest putt. You know, if you're developing a campaign, but your sales team doesn't know what you're doing, what you're promoting, and how you're messaging it to the marketplace, there's going to be a disconnect there. And your sales team, I mean, I'm with you, Cordy, you know, for those companies that have resources that can do drip marketing and all the sophistication, that's awesome. But what really happens, I think, in a lot of the small to medium-sized businesses is they've got reps, you know, and you need to enable your reps with what you're developing, what is being promoted to the marketplace so that there isn't that disconnect when it comes down to the follow-up or, hey, you know, what were we doing? Another thing that I wanted to mention here is that sometimes it doesn't have to always be solution-based. You can do content marketing around your value adds. So here's just a use case I was wargaming in my head. You know, let's say that you were an MSP or a reseller that was getting into digital signage and you wanted to make more money on the managed services. You know, how? Okay, so we hang and bang the display and that's it. But how can we make more money? So maybe it's a company initiative to do recurring revenue type of things in there. So you might develop a piece of content that talks about that, you know, the advantages that's going to go to the restaurant owner or the warehouse operator, mm-hmm. targeting your audience. So, you know, you develop the piece, it's maybe around your value adds, you're targeting exactly who you want that to go to. But as you craft this nice little message, make sure the rest of the team knows. Even the accounting team, it's not such a bad idea to let them know because they're interfacing with your customers. And as we all know, who can you get money or who you can get more business from easily are those you're already doing business with. So just consider those things. You know, as you craft these things, make sure that the rest of the team is aware of what you're doing.
Quick build on that. 100% agree. Sales, who better than the sales team to give you input into content creation process? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And my thought is, you know, if you're really, you can do a lot of research, you can learn a lot, you know, on the internet, doing your own stuff. But people who have actually spoken directly to these customers mm-hmm. are going to be great people to say, what are the issues that you hear people having, or what hesitations do they have about, mm-hmm. you know, employing new types of technologies, and then work that into your content. Because I think it kind of accomplishes two things. You get true insight from people who are on the front line, but then mm-hmm. you also get their buy-in. Mm-hmm. This wasn't just something Cordy went and did in his corner and then thinks he knows my customers and now he's out marketing to them and I don't even hardly know about it. We work together.
Absolutely. This is my content too. I gave him this feedback. Oh, yeah, I gave him that little nugget and look, it turned into this bullet point or whatever it is. Yeah.
It's winning as a team. You know, I mentioned 100%. The John before you got here, I listened to your guys' podcast on management and leadership, and that mm-hmm. was one of the points you guys made is, you know, being a part of a team. And it was it's funny listening to that, not to get too far down a tangent, where I was, you know, you're reflecting, hopefully other people did when they're listening, you're like, gosh, what's my style? Do I work good as a teammate? Because I think I work good as a teammate. Maybe I need to focus on that a bit more. But no, I think it's a great point. I do think the more buy-in you can have within your organization, you know, sales and marketing are meant to work together, and not just those departments, really everybody.
Well, you take a step back and you think about it. You're doing all this work to craft this content. And yes, we're advocating that not only do you take that piece of content, but then you break it up into little pieces and you can use it on whatever, on social, you can use it here, there. Great. You've put all this work behind it and yet your team has no idea what the heck you're doing. Or what the message is. And so when the opportunity does come in, the phone call does finally happen, or your customer's talking to your accountant and they have no idea that you're going down this new endeavor of a network operating system that can handle, you know, digital signage networks for their customer, whatever it is that they're doing. So anyway.
There would have to be nothing worse than a prospect that maybe saw some content and is already familiar with your company and reached out to a rep that they know mm-hmm. that had no idea what they were talking about.
That would be terrible, wouldn't it?
I mean,
happens.
You want to talk about destroying everything you just tried to do.
Right?
But you're right, it does. It happens.
And
I think it happens a lot. And I think we encounter that sometimes in some of the campaigns we do where we've maybe worked with a marketing team to craft the message and the audience and mm-hmm. figure out what the campaign's supposed to be about. But then the leads are being sent to salespeople.
Sales, yep. even sales at whatever.
Yeah, right. exactly. Like a generic sales inbox.
We'll be on the table. We've learned a lot. Cordy can attest to this. We've learned a lot as we've continued to modify the gearing behind behind the scenes of the digital marketing engine that we've developed. That is definitely one of the places that we have learned. And to this day, we continue to get better and get better and get better. How do we get better at that part of it?
Yeah.
You know, making sure that all the people know what we're doing, making sure that they know what their job role is, or if this happens to come across their desk, they're not looking at it like you just described. What the heck is that? You know,
right.
Where did this come from? We're doing this? No. Yes, we're doing that. You know,
type of thing. Surprise. Yeah. Yeah.
Surprise.
I would say that the more you're doing, the likelihood of that goes up too. Because it's tough. You're just trying to get stuff done. Sometimes you go, I forgot to tell everybody what we were doing.
Right.
But anyway. Yeah.
So I want to shift then, because you already kind of alluded to the idea of a team and, like, you know, making sure your team is aware of what's going on. Let's talk about a team to put together a content marketing campaign. Let's quickly talk about what kind of people do you need? What kind of tools do you need? Just a brief summary of, you know, how do you get started? If you want to do this, you know, you need to put some content out there in the world. And maybe right now you have one marketing person. Is that enough? Do you need more? What do you need?
I'm glad you said that last thing, because my feeling is everyone has different means in terms of their ability to go and build a team. So I will say that I'm a big advocate of using what you've got. If it's one person, or if it's only one person you can afford to go hire, you know, you're looking for somebody who's got some writing chops. So, John, that was one of the hidden talents you had that we found out shortly after, was that you blogged pretty, you know, what's the right word? You blogged a lot. You were a writer, even though you weren't a writer initially in your job. I've mentioned already the value of design. And any of these things, you know, if you have some core competencies and you're an internal person, great. There are things that can be, you know, done with outside help or what have you. But yeah, if you're looking for the one person, which is tricky, writing chops are important, because they're going to be writing not only the content, but the ads, the emails, the follow-ups, you know, copywriting, at least within my LinkedIn network and circle, is really kind of having a renaissance right now, where there's a lot of focus on how important good copy
is. I'd imagine
so.
Well, it gets back to the savvy consumer, right? I mean, it's got to be good stuff. If it's really thin veiled and people see that, and done.
Robotic and overly salesy. Yeah, and it does feel like, at least in the industries that we work in, the more human tone, the better. So copy is obviously important. The visuals are important. Good organization, if we're looking for one person. But if we move away from that to say, you know, what are the core skills that are needed here? Copywriting, design, we'll call it campaign management. So the technical side of setting things up and, you know, kind of getting everyone in line. And then sales. The sales follow-up piece, you know, again, you can generate a bunch of leads, and if you're not following up with it effectively, it's not doing you much good. So those are kind of the four pieces. And in our case, you know, in the instance of AppWare, we're generating leads for partners. So the sales team is always the variable that gets plugged in from campaign to campaign. In terms of the tools.
Well, before we go to the tools, because I really think that that's really important. And for the folks that are listening to this, because, you know, again, I was just kind of had my optics of a previous life of where I was. And you know, I'm thinking to myself, well, okay, I can write a little bit and I can definitely manage a campaign, but my design skills are terrible.
Yep.
So you got to kind of know what your skills are. And how it projects into that team that you just described.
Yep.
Well, and the components. And don't try to do the things that you're not really good at. I mean, if you want me to design, all I'm going to do is throw a drop shadow on it and say, hey, look what I just did. And it's hideous. And I know it. So know what's in your wheelhouse and augment what you can do or your team can do according to what you just said.
Great.
Because I think those are the key components, right?
There are a lot of freelancers out there in the world
100%.
That are happy to help you out.
Yeah.
It for relatively inexpensive prices. You're not talking about, you know, you don't have to pay them the salary, you have to pay for someone
on hand
the whole
time. That's a really
good
point, John. Yeah.
You know, you can go out there. There are a lot of freelance companies. There are a lot of companies that their job is to help connect you to these people. And especially, like, once you find somebody, one or two people maybe that are really good at this stuff and you like their work and it's effective, hold on to them. Keep feeding them. Give them projects. They probably are going to enjoy working with you if you've had a good relationship with them. But, you know, don't be afraid to go looking for some help if you need it.
You don't even have to keep feeding them, to be honest with you. I mean, I've used freelancers in the past where it might be a year that transpires. And, hey, by the way, Mike, you know, we got this other thing coming down the road. Oh, yeah, okay. He already knows what you're looking to do and all that kind of good stuff, so. Yeah, freelancers are a good way to go.
I'll make an adjacent point, which is, I guess what we're explaining on some level is there is a cost to creating content, especially because we want the content to be good, not just there. The design needs to be good. We can't just throw a drop shadow on. We already made that point that the better the design, the more trust there is. I truly believe that. Something to think about is, you know, even though in our instance, we create an ebook, we run a campaign, that campaign's over, we move on to the next one. That doesn't mean that the partner we created that content for can't continue to leverage it. So if I'm thinking about being, you know, a value-added reseller, an integrator, a smaller, medium-sized business, this isn't just something you're creating for the short term. It's, you know, it might be a $1,200, $1,500 investment to create this great 7 to 8 page ebook. But man, if you've been smart about that, and there are a lot of time-sensitive points in there, that's something you can use for the next couple of years on your own website through, you know, organic means to generate leads, you know, something to send to existing customers. Dean, you mentioned the best way to, you know, maybe the shortest putt to new business is with your existing clientele. So to be thinking about, yeah, it's an investment of time and effort, but it should also pay off for a while. And I guess I'll say that, yes, 100%, we rely on freelance help in some areas. We have a, you know, pretty significant in-house team as well. These things all become easier when you do have an internal team. So I'll just make that if it's a, if you have the ability to build a team to focus on this, that's ideal.
Right.
But if you don't, which we realize is reality for a lot of people, don't let that be the reason that you don't go and do this stuff, because it absolutely can be compartmentalized, like you said, kind of the skills inventory. What do we know? What do we feel confident we can do well in-house? And where do we have some, gosh, I don't know. Do we feel confident that we can measure conversion rate, you know, of a landing page, or know how many visits we had? And where do we need help?
You know, that's a really good point, though, Cordy. And one thing I was going to bring up, because I think that it's sometimes the afterthought, which is the fourth personnel, or if you will, in your ideal team, would be that campaign coordinator and or the technical person. That is a really, really important component. I mean, you know, you can build this nice snowball or whatever. You can have this whole team building it, but it's the ongoing in understanding how's the campaign functioning, what is it doing, somebody's got to keep their eye on the ball. You can't just build this nice ebook, promote it over to the world, and say, whoop, there we go, done. Yeah. No, that is just begun. It's just kind of like the starting line. So make sure, and if that is not in your wheelhouse, you can find people out there that will do that.
Yep.
Just as easy as you can find a freelance writer. Mm-hmm. There are people out there that have that skill set, that know exactly how to run a campaign, how to do the analytics behind it, know, and hey, you know what, this thing's not functioning very well. Because the other thing I wanted to throw on the table is that we know that from digital marketing and content marketing specifically, as a company, we've learned that you have to be able to pivot very quickly if something's not working.
Definitely.
You may think that you've got this perfect pitch and it's going to ring with the marketplace. Launch it only to find out, man, you know, not a lot of people are interested in this thing.
Yeah.
So we got to, if we're going to continue to spend really scarce resources, especially in this day and age, do we need to pivot? So you need somebody on your team that can be maybe that voice, even if it's a third party saying, you know what, in other campaigns that we've run, this isn't performing very well.
Right. And to be able to pinpoint the step in the process, right? So is it the initial ad, the click-through rate is really low, it's underperforming even though we thought it was going to do great, or gosh, people are clicking on this, you know, this ebook ad at a high rate, but they're not converting. Our conversion rate of filling out that form and submitting it is 10 percentage points less, or maybe, you know, maybe it's another step. So agreed. It is a critical role.
Yeah. And I would say the backside of that also is don't be afraid to target something or go after a campaign that maybe you're not entirely sure about, because we've had that happen a couple of times. Just to give an example, we did one for a lottery counting system, like a lottery inventory tracking system for instant lottery tickets at convenience stores, which I'm going to be honest, when we got that campaign, both Courtney and I both looked at each other and went,
can we reach these guys?
Like, how do we get to these people? Like, is a convenience store owner on LinkedIn? Like, how do we get to them? Well, we ended up finding an email partner that had a subscribed email list for convenience store owners and sent an e-blast to them. And it was one of our most successful campaigns of the last year. We had, I think, over a couple hundred, I believe, maybe leads that came in. Like, we had a lot of people got that, downloaded the ebook about it. I, you know, I haven't heard too much about the follow through on it. I'd like to find out like how successful the back end was. But I mean, we got a lot of leads out of that. And it was a market that we thought, there's no way these people are going to be out there, we're going to be able to reach them. So, you know, don't let that, you know, stop you. Also, again, like you mentioned, be ready to pivot if you do go to bartend with that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you put some money out there and no one's responding. You're not getting any leads. Maybe that's when you figure out, okay, do we need to shift our attention or just cut this one off right now and move on?
Yeah.
You know, but don't be afraid to try some things too.
And here's the great thing, that if you've built that team as Cordy has prescribed, you'll have the ability to pivot. You've got the right tool set. So is the content reaching? Okay, you got to go back to the content. Or is it the tool, or is the way that we're distributing it, you know, not ringing a bell? Do we need to think of an email because right. LinkedIn's not working here? If you got the team in place and you know the functions, you can pivot much more fastly.
One last point I want to make quickly is to challenge your assumptions. Just building on what you said, John. You
challenge your assumptions.
Truly, there you go. Can get into a spot where you think, we've been doing this for so long. Mm-hmm. We've done it in all these different industries or all these different solution sets. We know what's going to work. Or to your point, John, convenience store was not a target we'd ever hit before. But based on what we thought we knew about it, which is not, you know, overly digital, they're not really on LinkedIn. I don't think we touched LinkedIn for that one because of that. But I didn't know that they would even open an email and download an ebook. Is that a form of marketing that would even make sense to that industry? And if you would have just said, James, should we do this or not? I would have said, no, let's not do it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do that.
Right.
You know, and
it doesn't hurt to try. Yeah.
I wouldn't assume that most people listening to this podcast are in that situation where they feel like they've been doing this for so long that they know everything, but that's kind of where we're getting to. Yeah. And that's one of the big lessons is you don't really know, man. You got to go and find out.
Something nice might happen like that, you know, but mm-hmm. who knew that they'd start downloading? But also, you need to be able to pivot.
There's something to industries that don't get marketed to a lot as well.
Yeah, right.
If you can find a way to get to them, a lot of times that pays off.
Yeah. So I know we talked about maybe getting into the tools and platforms, and I think we'll actually be able to hit on that when we get into our value to the VAR section. Mm. For the interest of time, I want to kind of move us to that. Before we do, I do want to thank, as always, our recurring or our partners, our founding members of the Tech Connect podcast. That's Elo, Epson, Star, Honeywell, and Zebra. Thank you, as always, for your support for this podcast. We couldn't do it without you. But we do need to move on to our final segment.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to wrap things up today with the value to the VAR. And for this particular one, I wanted James to kind of take over this a little bit and talk about a specific campaign that we've done at Blue Star. And we've mentioned AppWare Solutions a couple times, but just to make sure everyone understands, that is our end-user-focused marketing campaign, a content marketing program that we do here at Blue Star, where we typically will partner up with a vendor of some sort. You know, one of our vendors will partner with us. A lot of times they're the ones that actually kind of drive this for us.
Mm-hmm.
We'll find a software partner, or they'll bring us a software partner that has an interesting solution that is targeted to a very specific audience and a niche. We help them kind of craft that message and figure out what the audience is.
Yep.
And then we go to work creating content and getting it out to potential leads. So James, I want you to talk about an AppWare campaign that we have run recently that we've had a lot of success with. Kind of, you know, maybe briefly step us through the process of, you know, what we were doing, how we reached out, what platforms and tools we used, and what the success has been.
Sure. So I'll mention two quickly and kind of map back some of the recommendations we made earlier to these campaigns. So why did these make effective campaigns? And these are actually both still in progress, but we've seen enough early success that they're worth mentioning. And they're just really great examples of exactly what we preach. So the first is a software company called Battalion 3. They have a solution. It's for incident command specific to fire scenes. So a lot of fire departments have what's called an incident commander. In other cases, it might be the chief or assistant chief, lieutenant, what have you, that while, you know, a fire is burning and it's being fought, they are tracking that process. It's funny the things you learn sometimes during these campaigns. Typically, they use what's called a tactical worksheet, which is like a big, huge, oversized kind of marker board. And they're marking down how many people are actively fighting, maybe even locations. They're timing things manually and making note of it. They're tracking the scene. This solution digitizes that. So it runs on a hardened tablet. And like I said, you start timers. You can even start multiple timers. You're kind of dragging and dropping people, resources onto the scene. And then when all, you know, when everything is done, obviously it spits out a digital report that you have, you know, to export and to analyze and all that good stuff. So, you know, the reasons it's made, in my mind, a really great campaign is because it is truly a solution built for a niche.
Mm-hmm.
And that speaks to people when you go out and say, hey, this isn't some, you know, solution that we're bending to your needs. This is really meant for you. So it enables us on the content side to say the fire chief's guide to incident command technology, incident command software. I'm not exactly sure what the title is. And to date, what we've done, so we built the content, step one. It's great looking. You know, it looks professional, as we said. It's addressing a very specific audience. And then we went to an outlet that we've actually used once before called firehouse.com. So I've mentioned LinkedIn in passing a couple of times. It's something we rely on a lot because through LinkedIn's ad tool, you can go in and build your own audience. You know, this industry, these job functions, this level of seniority, this company size, boom. It tells you how big that audience is. You get the ad in front of those people. But another technique we use really often, which is less precise, meaning when I went to firehouse.com and said, hey, how much would it be for you to send an email on our behalf? We're going to design the email. It's going to, you know, promote the ebook, but we want you guys to send it. We want to borrow your credibility to your audience. They go and do that for us. Oh, the point was the audience that they're sending to is an opted-in subscriber base. So even though some of the outlets we work with will allow you to say, hey, you know, how many people do you have? Well, we have 45,000. Well, how many do you have that are a job title of chief, lieutenant, deputy? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that's 18,000. Okay, great. Can I send to just those? That's not always available. But I guess the point is that on LinkedIn, I can be pretty darn precise about who I want my message to be in front of and who I don't. And with an email, you kind of take who they've got. You go in, though, assuming there's going to be a big chunk of fire chiefs and decision makers in this group. But yeah, there might be some firefighters or just some consultants, you know, other software competitors, perhaps, that are going to also download my ebook. So we went and did an email blast through firehouse.com. Like I said, they send it on our behalf. And if you can visualize getting it on your laptop or on your smartphone, you get the email. It's from Firehouse. You tap, you click, and then it sends you to a landing page where it's just very clear, bare bones. Ebook cover, what's inside with a few bullet points, and there's a form. Fill out the form, get the ebook. So that's, you know, that's how we capture the leads. Mm-hmm. It's in exchange for the content. What we did in this particular campaign, what we're continuing to do is, instead of someone filling out that form and submitting it, and it's saying, hey, thanks, go check your inbox. And the reason you would do something like that is to ensure you're getting real information. If you really want this ebook, you've got to give me your real email address. Mm-hmm. What we found over time is that that's not as big of an issue as maybe it once was, or maybe it's kind of depends on the industry. It's less of an issue than initially thought. So what we're instead doing is when people submit that form, boom, now we have their info. We have the ability to follow up with them in a manual way. We're sending them to an experience where there's an automated chat bot. The content is on screen, and to the right, there's a chat bot that starts prompting them with questions. What's your role within your organization? Okay, interesting. What's your biggest issue related to incident command? Or how are you currently dealing with it, let's say? Have you ever seen an automated version? Yes or no? Oh, no, I haven't. Would you be interested in seeing one? Schedule a meeting. Mm-hmm. So that's been the path, and it's kind of a new experiment that we're using here. Mm-hmm. And out of the first 115 ebook downloads, we've booked 11 demos. Mm-hmm. Sometimes
that's an impressive rate. I want to put
right. Like, I was just going to mention
that's very good. Yeah,
and it, maybe it's an outlier because I've already said once or twice, fire and rescue, law enforcement. These are under marketed to audiences, mm-hmm. and because of that, I think we're seeing a little bit of a best case scenario in terms of conversion rate. It's been really cool. So like I mentioned, the really critical parts are solution that's truly meant for a specific audience and then finding a way to get in front of that correct audience. And the other one I won't go into as much detail about, but you'll kind of see a theme here. It is a veterinary practice management platform. I already said veterinary. It's a practice management platform meant for veterinary businesses, veterinary hospitals, et cetera. In that case, we did an email blast, again, just like I described with Firehouse, through Vet Practice News, which was very successful. Forget the exact numbers, but you know, near 100, if not over 100. And we've also utilized LinkedIn. So I'll quickly just talk about what LinkedIn looks like. We were able to go in and define a geography. In this case, we went – actually, I think this one we focused on the U.S. and the U.K. because they're relevant over there as well. Veterinary is an industry available in LinkedIn. And then we said owners, you know, C-level folks and vice presidents. Mm-hmm. I don't think we used any company size filters. So we might have just left it there. And we've done a combination of sponsored posts, which if you logged into LinkedIn right now and you scroll down your feed, you wouldn't have to go four posts before you would see a sponsored ad from a company. So we do that. And then we also have the ability to do what's called a sponsored in-mail. Which the big difference in that instance is it's not in your LinkedIn feed. It would be in your LinkedIn inbox, and it doesn't come from a company. It comes from an individual. Mm-hmm. So in that case, we added the sales lead from our partner for this campaign, the ISV, the software partner, added them as a sender on our account, on the AppWare Solutions Blue Star account, and we're able to send personalized but automated in mail messages kind of at scale to, you know, the audience of 18,000 vet owners and C-level folks. And again, same message. Hey, here's the ebook. If you're interested, download it. And it's been very successful. And we haven't been using kind of that chatbot experience I mentioned on this one yet. We're planning to deploy it really soon. But even then, we've had, our partner has had quite a bit of success converting these folks. And I think one of the really nice parts about the veterinary campaign is we're asking people outright, how soon are you considering a veterinary, you know, practice management solution? Mm-hmm. And even though it's the smaller percent, some percentage of people are saying as soon as possible. Well, that's a wide open door. Yeah. Hey, you downloaded
that's
the
an instant lead right there.
You said you were, look, guess what? We created this content because we have this solution. Couldn't we, you know, can we talk? And they're having some great success on that front. I believe even have some quotes out that they're waiting to hear back on. So
that's awesome.
Hopefully that's a good illustration of kind of what we see as making a really, you know, good, relevant campaign.
Yeah.
And as he was talking, unfortunately, I know the history behind how we've gotten to where we are today. There's a lot of nice innuendo, not innuendo, but a lot of subtlety in what Cordy was just talking about, and a lot of what we've learned over the years of doing this digital marketing. You know, my value to the bar, one of the most successful campaigns that I was thinking about was way back when, this has to be 3-4 years ago, I forget, we made a pivot on the call to action for a campaign that we were running for 22 miles on digital directories. And the call to action was book a demo. I think it's the first time we ever did a book a demo, you know, call to action is like, and we were all kind of standing behind, yeah, like,
hopefully someone books a demo.
Right? And then boom, people started booking demos. And it was like this awesome thing. And it's like, yeah, a light just kind of went off. It's like, yeah, not only can we touch people and they can, you know, react to our content, but now we're getting even a little bit closer to the sales funnel. So, a lot to be learned in all those things that you were just talking
about.
Gosh,
that's a blast from the past. I remember that campaign.
I know, right? Look at how far we've come. Anyway,
it's true.
Well, I'm not going to add anything in particular to that. I did have some interesting statistics about content marketing that I pulled. I'm actually going to put maybe some of that stuff in the show notes.
Yep.
Maybe put a little bit of it on our social feeds. If you aren't already, follow us at TechConnectPod on Twitter. You can also email us techconnect@bluestarinc.com. In the interest of time, we're going to skip our What's Tech Connecting with Us this week. You've heard from us many times on this stuff. And frankly, it takes forever for us to think these things up.
Oh, you know? Man. It's still my favorite subject.
It is. It is mine, too. So maybe,
I'll save it for next
maybe
time.
I'll stick some of that in the show notes also. We'll give you some information on What's Tech Connecting with Us.
I almost forgot to mention, I do have a small 8 or 9 slide presentation on tools if people might be interested.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. We could link to that as well.
Yes, so please do. We would love to put that out there. So yeah, if you don't typically check out the show notes for our episodes either in your podcast feed or on YouTube, please do so. We will put lots of interesting stuff there for you to follow up with on content marketing, because there's a lot more we could talk about, a lot more we could get into, but we do want to kind of wrap up today. So I want to, as always, thanks James Cordy for joining us once again 4 times now. I'm sure it won't be too much longer before we have you in here for the 5th time. You're a recurring guest at this point far as we're concerned.
Yeah. You're the Alec Baldwin of our, what, I don't know, going back to the Saturday Night
That's
Live.
That's true, because he was the first 5-timer, wasn't he? Or Steve Martin, one of the two.
Martin. You're our Steve Martin. There you go.
So as always, for Dean, I'm John. Thanks again for tuning in with us. It is time for us to unplug. Until next time. The Tech Connect podcast is brought to you by Elo. From in-store interaction and point of sale to self-service, wayfinding, corporate, hospitality, and restaurants, companies trust Elo's Android systems to deliver enhanced interactive user experiences. Elo's focus on security, resilient products, long life cycles, and extended support make its Android-based solutions enterprise-ready. By leveraging Elo's unified architecture, organizations can easily configure, connect, and control an entire network of interactive devices to deliver the experience customers and employees expect with the adaptability their IT teams need. To learn more about Elo's approach to Android and suite of solutions, visit their microsite on BlueStarInc.com. Boosting supply chain productivity by accelerating and error-proofing work in distribution centers and manufacturing. That's the promise of Honeywell's CK65 mobile computer. With the longest supported lifecycle available, up to 28-hour battery life, and best-in-class ruggedness, the CK65 maximizes productive uptime while providing an easy path for users migrating from legacy Windows operating systems to the Android platform. To learn more, contact your Blue Star representative or visit Honeywell's page on BlueStarInc.com. Although RFID technology is not new for ADC applications, adoption levels are rising each year in a variety of industries. RFID deployments are still complex, though, which represents an opportunity for value-added resellers. Zebra wants VARs to understand how to ask the right questions, consider what technology is needed, and guide their customers to find the ideal RFID solution. They've created an ebook called Keys to RFID Success, a VAR's Guide to Selling RFID Solutions, to help you get started. To download the free ebook, go to vartechnation.com and search for RFID Solutions, or check out the link in the show notes.